Now, have you ever heard of the Billy Graham rule? Let me tell you about it. It's a restriction some men, and most notably the American Vice President Mike Pence, impose on themselves to prevent the temptation of being unfaithful. It dictates that a man can never be alone with a woman who is not his wife. If he is, it's considered a kind of betrayal. Now, for most of us, that might seem pretty extreme, but we all have our own ideas of what betrayal looks like. For some, it's a chat online. For others, it might be a drink after work. Or the more liberal amongst us may say an affair is only betrayal if it's ongoing for many years. But wherever our line is, according to the experts, most of us, that is, most of us, have crossed that line. Today on Talkback, we're talking infidelity. Not being loyal to your partner. Have you done it? What prompted you to make that decision? And what did it do to your relationship, not only with your partner, but family and those around you? And what have you learnt about yourself and others in the process? Now, we're not judging, we're just curious. And you can use a different name if you like. That's completely fine. We don't even have to know where you're from. But we do want to know about what you learnt. So whether you're straight, gay, married, or in an open relationship, Erica Vowles, who's with me now, and I would love to hear from you. As I said, no judgment, just curiosity. You can email us, lifematters@abc.net.au. And to wade through the sometimes messy waters of infidelity, with us today are Joe Corrigan, who's a clinical psychologist, and Patrick Stokes, who's a philosopher. Both specialise in matters of love, sex and betrayal. Patrick, Joe, welcome back to Life Matters.
Hello.
Hello.
Great to have you both back with us. Joe, I'm going to start with you. Mm-hmm. It's easy to shake the finger, but how common is infidelity?
I think it's pretty common, Michael, and I think if we all have a think back through our behaviour over time, at some point, most of us have been unfaithful.
Oh, really? Explain.
I think so. Well, even unfaithful in that we've sought out emotional support from somebody else in a very intimate way, or there's often, I just think that you, in life, you come to choices where you can act for self and do things that perhaps are considered unfaithful in the relationship, but you go ahead and do it anyway. And I think it's pretty common. I think if we all ask ourselves, it at some point we've either been tempted or we've considered or we've done an act of betrayal.
What I find fascinating too is how we define infidelity. And I've got to talk about this from a philosophical point of view in a moment. But from someone who's a clinical psychologist, when does being unfaithful begin in terms of behaviour?
I think it begins by turning to a third person. So if you think about a relationship as two legs in a three-legged stool, it's when you triangle in a third person to either soothe the tensions or gain support or, feel the attraction and approval of somebody else outside of that relationship. And that can often stabilise the couple. So the third stool is often a necessary element of the relationship, and it can actually be a very positive force in soothing the tension between the couple.
Oh, that's really interesting, because I was going to challenge your analogy of the stool, because I thought you were you got it all wrong. I thought that the third leg of a stool meant that you were creating stability when in fact it's a complete mess. But you think it actually in some cases creates the stability that was missing inside that two-legged relationship, if you like.
Absolutely. And I think that we triangle in all sorts of relationships, and not necessarily in our sexual ones, but definitely turning to a third person is what we do in order to soothe whatever's going on in that primary relationship. So it's normal. It's just that when feelings are intense and the tensions are at a high, we're often tempted to then slide along that continuum to have a sexual affair in terms of intimacy and support.
All right. I'm going to come back to you because you keep saying things that I want to contend with. Patrick Stokes, as a philosopher, I understand at the moment that you teach a course called Love, Sex and Death. So all the food groups there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
where you explore the philosophy of romantic love. It's actually I'm surprised that philosophers actually believe that exists.
Absolutely. I mean, this is one of those things where you can start off by saying, what is love? And everyone thinks they know. And one of the fun things about philosophy is that within about 45 minutes, you've got people realizing they know nothing, and that there's actually a whole bunch of very complicated, overlapping ideas, some of which are internally inconsistent. And it's a big, big mess. And there are things like intimacy, for instance, where actually getting clear on what that means and what the expectations are that arise from that is actually really important to understanding things like the nature of infidelity, and then from that, what may be right or wrong about infidelity.
So just a brief history lesson here. Have the philosophy greats tried to wrestle with the nature of infidelity going way back?
Yeah, well, so there's infidelity, not so much, maybe because it just wasn't that big a worry for people like Plato. They weren't, you know, it wasn't that big a deal for many of them. Certainly, many of them did. Kierkegaard, who was my guy, he was quite sort of concerned about that. He remained perfectly faithful to somebody after he'd broken off his engagement with her. So, but yeah, there's a lot of contemporary work too on the nature of trust in particular, and the nature of betrayal, and the nature of intimacy and what intimacy is. And you know, intimacy has something self-regarding about it almost, or self-involved, in that you don't just want it to be the case that your partner has someone to talk to, someone to have sex with, someone to walk on the beach holding hands with. You want to be the person that does that.
Right.
And so there's those set of intimacies and connections that are what are potentially threatened by infidelity.
Okay. So what do philosophers say then about people who supposedly, using that value-laden term, cheat?
Yeah, well, it is a value-laden term. That's exactly right. And it does depend, I guess, on what the sort of expectations involved would be. To a certain extent, this does... People tend to fall, I think, into two broad camps, and philosophers likewise do. Some people are full-on Epicureans who think that, look, if nobody gets hurt, it doesn't matter. Right? So long as there's no actual suffering, then nothing bad has happened. There are other people, Nagel-type people, for whom it's... Thomas Nagel, I'm thinking of there, for whom it's like, no, actually, being betrayed is bad, and it doesn't hurt to be betrayed because... being betrayed is not bad because it hurts, but rather it hurts because it's bad. It's a bad thing to do to someone, and so it's wrong even if they never find out. So that's a very fundamental dividing line between people, I think, and
I think
that can be a problem.
The core. You've nailed the very core of what happens when people make that decision to be unfaithful. You know, when do we tell? Does telling do more harm than good? Mm. How do I feel personally about that as the instigator of that infidelity? If I hold that secret back in? We'll be teasing this out over the time, by the way. If you just joined us, we're talking about infidelity, about what it means to be unfaithful. We've so often heard about the trauma and damage it does to the survivor of that that decision to be unfaithful, but we really haven't had the bravery all the time in a public sphere to talk about being the person who instigated that first act. So we're asking you, and as I said, no judgment. We just want to hear what you've learned about this. Erica Voles is going to take your first call.
Diane has called in from Queensland, and Diane, I believe that you were unfaithful in a relationship that you say had been dead for 10 years.
Yeah, I think there's, you know, a lot that people say about, you know, people deliberately setting out and serial offenders with this. But in my situation, I didn't realise it at the time, of course, but my relationship really had been dead for a good 10 years since our children had been born. And I had been giving nothing to the relationship, and nor had my... my husband been giving anything to the relationship either. And we just drifted further and further apart and became very... It's just like I can look at things now from the Gottman Institute, and I can classically see that, you know, our relationship had, you know, broken down with no care or attention from either of us. But for me, it was a complete spur of the moment thing, and it was never something that I had ever intended to do or set out to do. And something that I would never have thought myself capable of doing, because I respected the vows that I'd made. So to find myself in that position was actually quite surprising, I suppose, for myself.
And Diane, looking back on that time, what have you learnt about yourself?
I think that if I had been true to myself, I would have left the relationship years earlier, or would have worked on fixing it. While I regret the hurt, obviously, that was caused by my actions, and I can't take that back. I don't regret the fact that, you know, now that we're no longer together, you know, he's now got a new partner and he's really happy with her, and I'm glad to see that. I'm glad to see that somebody else has been able to provide him with the happiness that I couldn't. For me personally, I look at the fact that I stayed so long in a relationship that was just, it crippled me. I was dead inside in every single way. And not because he was a bad person, it just didn't work. So I know now that I've never put myself in a position like that again where I'm in a marriage for the sake of being in a marriage and being dead inside in the process.
Thanks for calling in, Diane.
That was great to hear. And if you'd like to join us in this conversation, we'd love to hear from you. As you can hear, we're really just curious about what you've learned about the process of being unfaithful. And it's, as we said, it's so often a side of this tension that is rarely talked about in this way on national radio, hence why Life Matters thought we'd try. And we'd love to hear from you. You can drop us an email, and that email address is lifematters@abc.net.au. Jane, you're in New South Wales.
Yes.
What prompted you to decide to be unfaithful?
It was my first sexual relationship, my marriage,
mm-hmm.
And I never ever thought, I never obtained orgasm. I actually truly didn't even know that there was something more than what we were having, except that I was very unsatisfied. So I was, 20, dynamic, looking like, you know what I mean? I had young, everybody's beautiful when they're young, or radiant. So I was constantly propositioned, and it was wonderful. Like, I realised that there was so much more to what our intimate relationship was about. And while I was in a regular external sexual relationship, our marriage was actually better sexually. Mm-hmm. And
well, this goes to what Joe Corrigan was talking about in that sort of third leg of the stool, where you were getting what you needed outside the relationship, which meant you didn't feel so dissatisfied inside the relationship.
Yeah, exactly. But
And what happened, if you don't mind me asking?
In the end, it destroyed us, our relationship, when somebody took it on themselves to tell my partner about somebody I trusted, we tried to get over it. He really tried. I stopped, tried to turn it internally, like keep it together. But he was never committed enough, I think, to do the hard work of overcoming his early orgasm when I wasn't satisfied. He wouldn't put enough work into that to overcome it. And plus he was hurt,
Of course he was. Yeah, of course. Yeah. So, Jane, what do you think now you're older and wiser? What have you drawn from that experience that could be advice for anyone else listening?
Well, I remarried or repartnered for another 13 years and had another child in a sexually happy... He was unfaithful to me in that relationship.
Right.
And I could never get over it. We separated. I'm an old woman now. I'm 63. That relationship also ended in heartache and pain and, shared custody, all that crap. It goes on day in and day out for years and years of your life. I say, don't go there. I reckon the rule, don't be alone in frigging a room with a male, particularly when you're young, male and female is dangerous. Mm. Certainly no after drinks, private phone calls or... You're asking for trouble. You're looking for something outside a relationship that you need to get in there or leave.
Thank you so much, Jane.
I think it's that serious.
I think you're right. I think it's always that serious. Jane, thank you so much for that. Really great to hear from you. Jo Corrigan, clinical psychologist. We've had a couple of calls there already from women who've been unfaithful. Very different circumstances, though.
And Michael, doesn't that explain the three stools, the three-legged stool?
Yes. I think that stool came crashing down in Jane's case.
Well, it's not to say that the stool is not going to come crashing down, but my just looking at it theoretically, affairs are the outgrowth of a relationship that's not working. So it's a symptom of something that's not working. And maybe you can have the strength and resolve to work through those issues, and an affair can highlight that and define the problems. And as Diane said, affairs can also restore a relationship and actually bring you back to that partner with a newfound respect and passion and realization that that's the relationship you want to be in. So it's just to, you know, the point is not to, you know, it's not a moral thing, it's a human behavior. And right. We do it out of a need. We do it out of a need for... you know, connection with someone, for approval, for attention. And it's not a question of whether it's right or wrong. It from my point of view, it just happens, right? People do it.
Behalf of the person who's been done to, it feels to them wrong. I just want to say that. I'm just representing them in this conversation.
It's total betrayal.
Yes.
Yes, and it hurts. And it is obviously one of the you know, the core things that when you take vows or when you form a relationship, the expectation is that you will be faithful to each other. So there's two ways of going about it as well. One is to discuss the idea of an affair before you do it so that it's not an act of betrayal. Mm. And the other is... you know, the consequences of doing it, whether you tell someone, whether you get found out, so that it might never be exposed and therefore it's a secret that you keep, or it's explosive and it destroys the relationship.
Patrick,
but I don't think it has to.
Yeah, just to add to what Joe's saying there too, part of the issue with betrayal is because it involves trust. And trust is an incredibly personal thing, because trust is not the same thing as just relying on someone, right? So when you trust that your partner's not going to cheat, it's not just that you think they're not built like that, or they don't have time. I'm always impressed by people that have time and energy for affairs.
Same.
It looks exhausting. But it's not just that. It's also that...
But isn't it sad that you go, I would, but I'm just too busy.
No, but this is the thing, right? But it's also that trust means that somebody is not just relying on you. It also means that they are saying you won't do this because you know they're relying on you not to do it.
Right.
So it's an intrinsically personal thing. It has a much deeper dimension than simply failing to do something. And that's, I think, what activates a lot of that hurt and a lot of that pain, is not simply that the person did this, but that they did this knowing that I was relying on them not to do that.
Yes, that's right.
But can I also add there that the idea of the relationship is going to soothe all of my insecurities. The relationship is what I need to depend on in order to define myself and to stay calm and focused and considered in life is in itself a problem, because you can never really know how people are going to behave when they're put in circumstances of opportunity.
Yeah.
So it's how do I turn up in the relationship and soothe my own insecurities and deal with the tensions, the conflicts, discuss them, and be able to present myself as, you know, a considered position in this relationship, not expecting the relationship to be the one that does, you know, that the fusion between us is going to be what keeps us together.
Thank you for that, Joe. Josie has called in from the Northern Territory. And Josie, you believe your family background had a bit of an impact on the infidelity that happened in your life.
Yeah, both my parents were very free and easy with their love. They both had multiple partners, and I grew up with having extra people in my family.
And so when I believe that you were unfaithful with your husband, what was the impact of that relationship?
Well, we got together. He knew about how I grew up, and he was excited about this idea that having other partners wouldn't be a problem as long as we stayed faithful to each other and talked and shared things as our primary person. But over the years of our marriage, he got very, I would say, jealous because I think maybe I had a little bit more success than him. I don't know. But he got very jealous and the relationship got super abusive.
And so what have you learnt, Josie, from that experience?
I learnt, well, my parents also split up through a third party interfering in their marriage. And I would say that you have to, if you are going to have a free and easy, lovely relationship like that, it takes a lot of work and a lot of communication ongoing. You can't just make an agreement and stick with it. You need to be talking all the time or just stop.
Josie, that's really interesting, and thank you so much for calling through, because that was kind of organised infidelity, if you like. It's where both partners knowingly were going outside the marriage, but in the end, one of those partners actually couldn't cope with what that actually meant in reality. Brett, you're in Queensland. Tell us about what happened in your situation.
I was married for about 25 years, and partly as that relationship progressed and we had a child together and stuff, my wife's appetite in terms of her sexual desires decreased over time. And through a process of believing that if I was to, you know, feed that desire in myself, that I could then continue with a relationship. So
that's how you rationalized it to you.
Yeah,
you?
Right, yeah. And, right. And to a degree it worked, because fundamentally, apart from the lack of desire that my wife had and my eagerness to have that sort of physical intimacy, sexual intimacy, it was a way, everything else in the relationship was fundamentally really good. We were best of friends, just ongoing sort of joy and love for each other, but it just wasn't in a physically sexual way. So I thought that would help improve that, and it did, as far as I was concerned. But it came to a head when I suddenly realised that I couldn't continue to live like that.
Did your wife know that you were having sexual... Okay, so did you confess to her?
No.
So what happened in the end?
Oh, it was just a matter of coming to terms with, look, I need to separate. We can't go on like this.
Right.
Yeah.
And does she understand why you made that decision for your own needs?
Yeah, we did talk about that, and basically just saying there was such a difference between the desire for physical intimacy, and I don't think it was something, and I suggested, okay, why don't we think about, you know, having someone or somewhere I can go to relieve that and continue the relationship, and that wasn't something that she was willing to do.
Okay.
So that's why the relationship broke up.
Thanks for that, Brett. Rachel has called in from Victoria, and Rachel, I believe you were unfaithful in your first marriage. What was going on for you?
That's right. So I was in my late 20s, and it was someone I worked with who kind of approached me to work for him, so I kind of always wonder whether it was sort of a targeted approach from the beginning. And it was one of those things that I just felt like I had no control over, that he, you know, was satisfying some needs in me, and I knew it was wrong, and I felt so wrong, and the betrayal was horrible, but it was making me feel better. And I think at the start there, it did actually cause some improvements in my marriage. But it took me a long while to realise that the problem was in my mouth. I thought it was because I just had some gene in me that meant that I couldn't be faithful, that that's why I was doing it. And it took me a long while to realise that maybe it was actually my relationship that was the problem and not me.
So how did it resolve?
So I got to the point where I realised I needed to end my marriage, which I did, and just at the moment I did that, I discovered I was pregnant, which was just the worst thing ever. And
So I moved out. I stayed. It was sort of a regional community, fairly large regional community. So
no details needed, Tessa. That's fine.
No. Yep. And then so had the baby. That was kind of, you know, as far as my ex-husband knew, that it was just that I was unhappy with the marriage, but we'd separated. And then he was babysitting or looking after our baby, and found a diary which pretty much told him everything. And then things really went pear-shaped, and he, you know, we had to have a conversation with the man that I'd had the affair with. He demanded that he tell his wife, demanded that I have a DNA test for our daughter. It just
went down in a spiral. Yep. Rachel, yep. I called you Tessa, my apologies, but Rachel, that's a story that, yeah, I think is a signpost for many people who are maybe thinking about this. Just think about, I guess, down the track, what could happen if things don't go as well as you want them to go. Thank you so much for that. Simon, I might come to you if I may. You used to cheat, if I can use that word, sorry about that. If you were unfaithful a lot when you were younger.
Yes.
What happened as you got older?
As I got older, I tried a different tack, because I used to get paranoid and assume my partner was always playing up, so I figured I may as well too. And then later, after finding out, you know, that it wasn't much fun for both of us, I ended up in a relationship with another woman, and I decided not to get paranoid and just trust. And that went successfully for 4 years. And then she played up, and I got really hurt, and I felt what it felt like for my previous partners.
So, and, lesson learnt.
Yeah, big time.
Right.
Painful lesson.
Simon, thank you very much. I might come back to our guest on this. Patrick Stokes is a philosopher, Joe Corrigan, clinical psychologist, and they've been listening, as we have, with great interest to your honesty and frank discussion about what it is to be unfaithful and what the impacts have been for you long term. Erica Voles is with me as well, taking your course. Thanks for that. Patrick, I might come back to you. Do you believe that being unfaithful is a different kettle of fish than it might have been 100 years ago?
Look, quite possibly. Part of that may well be because we actually have pretty huge expectations of our relationships now. There's at least one argument that what it is that we no longer expect to go to heaven, so instead we expect that our relationships are the thing that will turn everything into, you know, the happily ever after scenario. And so we put huge, huge weights and huge expectations on them. And as Joe's saying, maybe we expect more of them than very often they're capable of giving, and that's something we need to think about.
That's really interesting. So, Joe Corrigan, interesting, you mentioned earlier that you believe that, in fact, I'm sure you've seen evidence, of people where there's been infidelity in a relationship have come out of that process of naming that and examining why it occurred as a stronger couple.
Exactly, as an opportunity of growth to really own up to the type of relationship you want to have, the type of partner you want to be. But listening to those callers too, so beautiful in their examples of people don't necessarily have an affair because they don't love or respect their partner. You know, that I mean, you play with fire, you play with fire, someone's going to get burnt. And in a lot of cases, the emotional impact is far too great for people to be able to then use their reason mind to work out where is the growth, or, you know, what do I have to look at here, or how do we communicate through this? Because clearly whatever we're doing is not satisfying each other. But that's a really brave, mature step to take, to be able to sit back from an affair and look at, okay, like these people have been explaining, it arose out of needs not being met, or the feeling of not being appreciated or found to be sexually attractive. And they're just human needs. I mean, people then seek that out. And so it's more the reality is that we do have affairs. Now how are we going to deal with it? You know, it's regardless of right or wrong, or how people that it's very dangerous and hurtful behaviour. Many people have to deal with it. You know, I don't think it's uncommon in in relationships that people at some point have to deal with that external force.
Something that Esther Perel said, the renowned Belgian born but living in New York based psychotherapist, when I was talking to her about infidelity some while ago, said something really interesting. And she said that often people are unfaithful not because they don't love their partner, but because they don't love themselves.
Beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Patrick, you've...
Sounds about right. There's certainly something to that. I mean, it was interesting, Rachel talking earlier about lack of control. Right, and feeling like she just wasn't in control of what she was doing.
Yes.
I mean, that's potentially something that signifies something else, that the sense in which you don't feel that you're actually able to rationally control and structure your decisions.
Right, okay.
There's a beautiful description in the Alain de Botton book, The Course of Love, about just the sort of very realistic portrayal of a man leaving his children and wife at home and going on a conference and just coming across an opportunity to spend a night with a woman, and how it basically reignited passion, and, you know, it was just sort of a beautiful experience for him to then go back and reevaluate his relationship and turn up and be a better partner. I mean,
yeah, that sounds like a lovely example. We should read that. But we're going to take one more call before we finish up because time is upon us. Erica.
Tessa has called in from New South Wales about some of her infidelity. Tessa, tell us your story.
Okay. So I had a beautiful relationship with a man, and I was unfaithful with him, with his best friend.
That must have been hard for everybody.
It was a nightmare. In the end, and it caused so much pain to everybody.
And Tessa, do you know why? What was going on for you?
Possibly the man that I was in the relationship with became sort of like my parent. Like, he cared for me, and then the sex went, and then he was attracted to his friend, obviously, like, not sexually, but...
They had a camaraderie, and then, of course, that's eroded
as
well.
And then I took over that, and it stuffed up everything.
Tessa, I can hear how much it's still troubling you, and I do thank you very much indeed for taking the time to call. All the best with working on those feelings, and thank you to everybody who's been so honest and open with all of us here in discussing what is a very difficult subject, and you've been fantastic at it. Mm. So congratulations to you all. Patrick Stokes is a philosopher, Joe Corrigan, psychologist, and Erica Vowles, what's been coming in over the space of the hour?
Lots of texts coming in. One text, what about the old emotional affairs? It is usually a friend who becomes the one to do it. And another person has texted in to say it's always about physical infidelity, never the fact that the other partner could be hurting you in all other sorts of ways, emotional, financial, intimate.
If you'd like to weigh in on this conversation we've had on these two stories today, of course you can feel free via email, lifematters@abc.net.au.